Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we're taking on a topic that, well, it might seem pretty foundational, maybe even simple, but it's resilience, the adaptation strategies. They're absolutely fascinating. We're talking traditional media. Yeah, the massive industries that really laid the groundwork for, well, everything you consume today. Okay, let's unpack this. We've got our sources lined up, and our mission today is clear. We need to define these core sectors: film, television, radio, and print publishing. And crucially, really dig into their technological advancements, you know, the huge challenges they faced when the internet exploded, and the specific ways they adapted to survive, maybe even thrive. We want the knowledge quickly, sure, but we need the full picture, the context.
Right. And to set the stage properly, we have to understand that historical line in the sand. When we talk about traditional media, we are specifically, strictly talking about industries established and running before computers, and the public internet really took hold. That's the key cutoff. They weren't born digital. Digital was, you know, thrust upon them.
And when you look back at that landscape before the internet, you definitely see those four pillars holding everything up, culturally speaking.
Exactly. We're diving into film, television, radio, and print publishing. And the story isn't just, oh, they went online. It's how they had to fundamentally rebuild their operations, their business models, around tech they didn't even invent.
Okay, let's start with the big one, film. When you think massive global industries, complex logistics, huge money, incredible scale, film is right up there. I mean, from tiny indie projects all the way to those nine-figure Hollywood blockbusters employing thousands.
The scale is just undeniable. And the change, tectonic. For decades, everything revolved around the physical stuff. Celluloid film. Now, in what was really a necessary technological pivot, most high-end production, it's captured digitally. That's maybe the first huge transformation these traditional sectors had to navigate.
But hang on. Shifting from physical film reels to, like, a digital file, that can't just be about the camera, can it? That must have completely shaken up the whole workflow. It's not just convenience, right? It's got to be about speed, about cost.
No, absolutely. Think about the old constraints of celluloid. You had to physically develop it, cut it, splice it, then ship these heavy cans all over the world to cinemas. So when we look at the three core stages, pre-production, production, and post-production digital, just dramatically streamline the back end.
How so? Where did the digital file really make the biggest difference operationally?
Mostly in post-production. Moving to digital capture and storage, that enabled non-linear editing. Before, if an editor wanted to, say, move a scene, they literally had to cut the physical film and tape it somewhere else. Super time-consuming and destructive if you made a mistake. Now, the digital file allows instant manipulation, color grading, adding effects. It just drastically cut the time and the financial cost for that whole post-production phase. This wasn't just a nice-to-have advancement. It was an efficiency imperative. It made film production cheaper, faster, letting studios push out content much more quickly.
Right. So that digital transformation, making production cheaper and quicker, that's kind of what allowed the film industry to keep its massive scale going. It's a perfect example of tech transforming the core engine.
Exactly. And if we connect that idea of physical constraint, the film canister, to consumption constraint, that takes us right to television and radio.
Right. Yeah, I often group TV and radio together mentally. Historically, their entire model was built on that one crucial shared thing, offering content broadcast to a fixed schedule. You had to be there, you know, Tuesday at 8 p.m. or you missed it.
And that fixed time constraint dictated everything else. Program length, for instance, usually fitting into neat 30 or 60 minute slots built around ad breaks. But the challenge here, implied by our sources, especially for television.
Well, it's probably the most aggressive disruption the media world has seen in decades. Streaming services?
Yeah, streaming didn't just offer different shows. It basically blew up the whole idea of the fixed schedule. The viewer was suddenly in control. No more waiting.
And this is where it gets really interesting. Because the strategies they used to adapt, they weren't just small tweaks. They were like fundamental survival moves.
Yeah.
Initially, you saw the traditional TV networks and studios licensing their stuff out to aggregators like Netflix. Good revenue, right? But then they realized these aggregators were building the direct relationship with the consumer. That's when the networks had to pivot. And hard. Okay, so what were the actual concrete strategies? What did the big TV players do to fight back against, you know, the Netflixes of the world?
Well, there were three main ones, really. Consolidation, launching their own platforms, and investing big in prestige content. First, consolidation. You saw these huge mergers and acquisitions. Disney buying Fox assets is a prime example. Pool the IP, gain market power. Second, They pulled back their best stuff, their crown jewels, and launched their own direct-to-consumer platforms. Think
Right.
HBO Max, Peacock, Paramount Plus A. They started building these walled gardens.
Right. The thinking being, if you want our best shows, our biggest movies, you got to subscribe to our service now, not just the aggregator.
Exactly. And the third strategy was just pouring money into prestige. To make these new subscriptions worth it, they massively upped production budgets for event TV. Shows like Game of Thrones, The Mandalorian, stuff that rivaled the scale of movies we just talked about. They essentially had to bet everything on quality and exclusivity to tempt viewers back from that all-you-can-eat buffet model.
Wow, okay. That strategy takes serious cash. Billions. So if TV fought the streaming war with massive capital, how did radio handle its adaptation? Because radio still feels, well, incredibly present, doesn't it? Especially locally. Despite music streaming, podcasts everywhere, what made radio's move into digital so effective?
Radio's path is, yeah, it's a masterclass in using digital tech to enhance the traditional format, not replace it. Radio's core strength has always been that real-time local connection, the personality DJ, local news, traffic updates, streaming services. Great for your music library, but they struggle with that hyper-local, spontaneous feel.
So it wasn't just about sticking a live stream online then?
No, not at all. Their success, I think, has two parts. First, they cleverly used podcasting. It gave a second life to content that used to just vanish after broadcast interviews, funny morning show bits, you name it. But the real game changer, arguably, was implementing DAI, digital ad insertion.
DAI. Okay, what does that actually mean for them? What's the impact?
Well, DAI lets a local radio station that's also streaming online dynamically insert targeted ads. Ads tailored specifically to you, the listener, based on maybe your location, your demographics, instead of just blasting the same car dealership ad to everyone over the airwaves. This made their ad revenue way more efficient. It leveraged digital precision while still delivering that classic immediate radio feel. That focus on hyper-local, targeted money-making, it helped radio become this robust digital player without ditching its core scheduling model.
That makes a lot of sense. Using the new tools to basically double down on their inherent local strength, something the big global players can't easily replicate. Okay, that leads us nicely to the final sector, the one dealing with maybe the most physical constraint of all, print publishing.
Yeah, this is the industry literally defined by the physical object. The paper, the ink, the binding. It produces that huge variety of magazines, brochures, books, posters, things used for advertising, sure, but also entertainment and education, foundational stuff.
But unlike film, you know, moving from celluloid to digital files, or TV shifting from a broadcast signal to a stream, print's core product is still physical. That seems like an almost impossible hurdle when you're up against free, instant online news and information.
It is, absolutely. And the disruption hit hard and fast. Two main ways. Losing audience, obviously, but critically, losing advertising revenue. Advertisers just shifted their budgets online, leaving print outlets with less money to actually produce the physical thing.
So how did they adapt? I mean, they couldn't just stop printing everything, but they couldn't keep bleeding money either.
Sure.
What were the specific adaptation strategies that let the major print players hang on?
We really see two distinct paths that worked, depending on the product type. The first was premiumization. For things like books, maybe certain high-end magazines, they adapted by making the physical object itself feel luxurious or durable. Think about those beautiful coffee table books, collector's edition novels, or glossy magazines that are more like curated objects. They justify a higher price because the physical quality becomes part of the whole experience.
Ah, so shifting the value proposition. It's not just about the timely info anymore. It's about the craftsmanship of the actual thing.
Precisely. And the second strategy, arguably more crucial for newspapers and news magazines, was implementing strict digital paywalls. The New York Times is the classic example here. They realized ad revenue alone wouldn't cut it online. They had to pivot their whole business towards subscriber revenue. So they doubled down on journalistic quality and then pretty aggressively put that essential content behind a solid, non-negotiable paywall.
That must have taken a huge leap of faith, though. Trusting that enough people valued their specific content enough to pay, even when so much other stuff online was free.
It was a massive strategic shift. It took real nerve. They consciously chose the stability of subscriptions over chasing advertising volume online. Their adaptation wasn't just, let's put stuff online and run banner ads. It was, let's go online, make our product indispensable, and then charge for access. That very deliberate choice to maintain the value of scarcity, even in an age of digital plenty, is a big reason why some of them are still successful today.
Okay, that really ties it all together. We've walked through all four sectors now. So looking across this whole traditional media landscape, What does it all mean? What's the big takeaway?
Well, if we connect it all back, the overarching story isn't really about technology replacing tradition. It's more about tradition adopting, wrestling with, and ultimately leveraging technology just to survive. We saw film embrace digital workflows to cut costs and boost output. We saw television consolidate and spend billions building its own platforms to fight fragmentation. We saw radio use digital ad tech to smartly protect its local niche. And we saw print pivot hard from ad dependency to demanding direct payment via paywalls.
So the common thread isn't just surviving the internet. It sounds more like fundamentally changing the core business models that had been pretty much fixed since, the mid-20th century.
Exactly. And understanding these really profound strategic operational pivots, the how and the why of their survival, that's essential context for getting a grip on the whole media landscape today. You can't really analyze the challenges facing, say, a YouTube or a TikTok without understanding how the institutions that came before them had to tear down and rebuild their own foundations to stay in the game.
It really is an incredible journey they've all been on. Driven by, existential pressure, not really by choice. They fundamentally changed the rules of their own games.
Which leads us to maybe a final thought for you, the listener, to mull over. If the definition of traditional media is, as we said, strictly industries established before the internet, industries defined by their struggle to overcome those physical or time-based limits, then what shared characteristics or maybe what operational pressures define the totally new media industries that came after? The ones built digital from day one. They didn't have to adapt. They set the new rules. What does that difference in origin story mean for their future stability or evolution? Something to think about.